Hi, everybody. This is In the Green Room once again. Hanging out in the green room. And we've got a good program for you today. And I'm sure you will enjoy it. And there won't be any call-in lines today, but you can call in later on. My co-host today is Marianne Romano from Hopewell Valley Community Bank. She's thank you for being here and helping us through this today.
Thank you so much for inviting me and for having Judy.
Yes, yes, Judy Neal. And I believe Judy's on the phone. Are you on the phone, Judy?
I am. I'm here.
Good. Sound nice and clear over here. So we're going to start it off. Well, first I wanted to say, how was your weekend, Marianne?
My weekend was very good. I had a wonderful weekend. I got to hang out with my youngest daughter, and we just always laugh a lot when we're together. So we had a lot of fun.
Right. What did you think about last week with all the stuff going on, all the different policies that were coming out by the Supreme Court and stuff like that?
I think it's a wonderful thing that love is honored. And I think that's. I'm really glad that there are people who love each other are able to express that love and be committed in a relationship like anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really sad that there's a lot of people who are so judgmental or narrow-minded in their thinking that they can't embrace the love part of it.
I think it's fear.
It is fear.
People are afraid to let go, and that's what holds back love all the time.
You know what I really think in conversations that I've had with people, like, we live in a very our community is very it's a very gay community where it's no big deal.
Right.
But there
are a lot
of people who don't live in those kind of communities, and maybe they're not really around people who are anything other than heterosexual, which I find really hard to believe in today's world. But I think a lot of people that I've talked to have this mentality of gay as being, you know, the people who are hooking up in bathrooms in an airport
or on a
rest stop on the side of the road, and that's they have a misconception of really
absolutely,
and I think it is all based in fear and misunderstanding.
As usually biases are, and prejudice and. This is, and so many things are going on, though. People are waking up in some way or another, you know, and it's great. It's great to have the Supreme Court say something to set the pace for this, you know, and just great, you know.
And I think there's extremists on, you know, in everything. In everything. There's so much that's, I think, going on right now in our culture, even. It just feels like...
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the race issue and,
you
know, the gay issue, it's like there's a lot of tension and pull. And out of that, I really hope and I pray that, you know, there's an awakening that's happening where people can love and accept human beings for being
human. Yes.
I'm not trying to put people in boxes. And
Exactly what you said. I mean, unfortunate situations have brought about so many cool things happening. Like, you know, after so many years of having a flag that represents racism taken down, I mean, because of a situation that happened, you know, and people coming together, and more people recognizing that. Judy, you can jump in at any time.
Thank you. It's the predominant conversation in our society right now.
Oh, absolutely.
All these amazing things. I liken it to like the sudden fall of the Berlin Wall. And it just happened so suddenly, this major shift towards freedom, towards enlightenment, towards yep. empowerment.
Yeah.
And that's what this past week has felt like to me.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
That's a really good way to put it.
Yeah, just tectonic kind of shift that was a surprise, that all so much happened all at once. And for me, such a beautiful thing that we are moving, as Marianne said, more towards love. And that's what every spiritual tradition teaches at its center, love, compassion, forgiveness, kindness, non-judgmental. So to see the Supreme Court moving in that direction.
That's quite a feat.
yeah, it gives you a lot of hope.
Yes, it does.
It really does. It does.
Yeah, I don't know if it's because I'm around Lambertville. Lambertville's an amazing place. And I don't live here, but I work here, and I've been here for 3 or 4 years now. And the energy in this city is just so conscious. You know, I think it's that experience of openness and
very accepting.
It's tolerant and open, and and I feel that love. We have a lot of programs here, right here on the station, about metaphysical stuff and love and. And people are open in this town, you know. They're just open to that love. There's so many spiritual things going on, you know. Every time I have a guest, it just opens up into something, you know, about one knowing themselves, one feeling that thing inside, you know. So
and knowing that the self is not the small ego self.
That's right.
But this interconnected oneness self, which is gets back to what these laws really are pointing at in a kind of an oblique way, is that love is what connects all of us, whether we're gay or straight or black or white, or doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Love, that's the thing.
It
doesn't. Those things don't matter.
But yeah. they.
But, and I think the fact that they've mattered for so long, there's an awakening where people are waking up to the fact that it doesn't matter. And
you could see the contrast with the opponents to this whole thing. It's like
they've lost
so much traction. You know, it seems like people are realizing that, what are you talking about? There's something more important than corporations and money and stuff like that. There's something that's basic for all of us, and they're turning away from that. Well, they're turning towards love, which is...
Yeah. That's the goal for everything, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
So, you've been bringing love into the workplace, from what I experience.
I don't know if I personally am. Maybe I carry a banner for that.
There you go. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah. You know, it's like each one of us has to do that on our own. But I've been studying workplace spirituality since 1992.
Uh-huh.
That's a lot. Yeah, a big part of my professional life has been devoted to one of the things that got me thinking about news was back in the 90s, there were so many horrible headlines about things that corporations were doing.
Right.
That, you know, the constant fraud and just really awful wasteful things that CEOs were doing, big parties with corporate money, and just an amazing amount of negative publicity for the dark side of corporations. And I, in my spiritual practice, I really have wanted to consistently choose the light, the positive, the good, and give that energy. And the news is the opposite. What sells is the dark.
Exactly, yeah.
So I wanted to find a way to look at the positive stories of organizations. Where were the enlightened organizations? Where were the places where people really cared, were really open about spirituality or consciousness or faith or whatever you might want to call? I think it's all the same because they all point to love. But that are open to a workplace being a loving place for its employees, for its stakeholders, for its customers, for the environment. And so I began a search for leaders and for companies that, you know, could be a positive story to tell. And of course, they'll never be in the headline.
Right.
But I wanted to tell their stories. And so that's what my writing and research has been about since 1992.
How did you come up with the name Edgewalker, Judy?
I love that word. It actually was inspired by an article, and that's the name of one of my books, Edgewalkers. And it was inspired by Malcolm Gladwell, who, before he was really famous, before he'd written any books, had written an article in Fast Company magazine, which at the time was a brand new, edgy business magazine that, you know, I just loved because it was made Fortune magazine and Business Week look kind of stodgy, you know. And he wrote this article about how change happens. And my academic background and my professional background has been in organizational development, organizational change. And he said change always happens on the edge of a system. And that people who are on the boundary of a system have a foot in both worlds. They have a foot in the company, and they have a foot in the external environment. They really serve a bridging function that can help see what's going on in the world and then bring that back to the company or the nonprofit or the church or the university or whatever organization you want to talk about, the Supreme Court. And so they're boundary spanners and they're bridge builders. And he said, it's really very holographic. They're on the edge, on the margins of society, and that they even live on the edge of town often, because some of the things they do are not necessarily accepted by the mainstream because they're more experimental and they don't always follow the kind of mainstream rules. So they don't want to be under the watchful eye of the man or the corporate world. They like to be more on the edge of things.
Right.
And at the time I was leading a group of leaders that were very interested in incorporating spiritual values and practices in their companies. We met once a month and had a dialogue group. And so I told them about this article and said, you know, I really think that people who are interested in change are real edge walkers. Well, this energy lit up in the room like you set off a 4th of July explosion. They got so excited. We're edge walkers. I know we are. You know, we love being on the edge. And they just so ate up this concept and this idea that it became, we called ourselves the Edge Walker Group after that. And so, you know, I'd start talking about edge walkers and people say, well, what's an edge walker? And then I'd have to make it up.
Well, I have to tell you, when I heard you speak at the Wharton Club, that was a really kind of a pivotal point for me, because I had never heard that term, and you really encouraged me so much to, you know, kind of gave me language for and an understanding for what I was feeling and living, and. Yeah, and yeah. I just want to say too, like I wish the president of our bank was here. I had invited him, but he wasn't able to come because he, you know, a bank is such a kind of staunch institution with lots of regulations, and he hired me specifically because I'm an edgewalker and liked some of, you know, the things that I was doing and wanted me to bring that energy to the bank, and that's so rare. It's so rare.
It really is.
Yeah.
And I remember the look in your eyes, Marianne, when you first came up to me and we, you know, we started talking about edgewalkers and what's an edgewalker, and your real sense of seeing yourself in that role and knowing now that there was a name for it, that it had a really important function. Edgewalkers is where... they're where the change happens, where we move ourselves forward. And to be honored for that instead of marginalized is such an important thing that we need to do in society.
Well,
you
know,
say something?
Yeah, I think it's really hard when you grow up in a in a world where, you know, where you're, you know, sit down, hold still, you know, be quiet, mm-hmm. and you're not allowed to, you know, you're put down for being expressive. And why can't you just do everything the way everybody else does?
Right. You know, I heard that my whole life. Never my good point. I always had to stretch the situation.
So no, when you after that talk, it was kind of like I felt like, oh, it's okay to be me.
Actually, it's more than okay. It's important.
Yes.
It's really important to be you and to be different and to be willing to take a leadership stand in moving all those you touch, moving them forward and in love and consciousness and kindness and creativity and innovation. Yeah, you're the leader in that.
So, do you go to corporations and do training, or are you traveling and talking? What are you doing these days?
Well, I retired from the University of Arkansas 2 years ago. I was running, when I met you, I was still running the Center for Faith and Spirituality in the Workplace at the Walton College of Business. And I left there 2 years ago to focus more on Edgewalker. So I do a little bit of everything. I mean, I'm sort of semi-retired, and so I do the things that intrigue me and that I love and don't feel like I have to work really hard these days. It's just being able to totally do what I love. So sometimes I coach business leaders one-on-one. Sometimes I do workshops. I've done several this year, a few online and some face-to-face. Sometimes a company calls me, and it's usually healthcare. That's been the primary kind of institution
that you're working
that really wants to have this kind of conversation. So a bank is quite unusual.
I know,
your bank is not the only one, but it's pretty unusual.
So if you were to describe for our listeners some of the qualities of an edgewalker, mm-hmm. what would they be?
The first and most important quality is an interest in knowing oneself. I call it self-awareness, and having self-awareness practices, whether that's journaling or having a coach or meditating, but having some process that's right for you and your unique individuality to know yourself better. I think that's bedrock for any leader, but especially for edgewalkers, because in the environment that edgewalkers find themselves in, there's often so many naysayers about, you can't do that, that's too different, that's not the way we do things here. So you have to have a strong inner core of knowing who you are. The second quality is passion. And passion comes from knowing your mission in life, why you are on the planet at this time, what your gifts are, what your purpose is at this time, because purpose can change over time, it evolves. But having a real clear sense of your own calling and a willingness to give up some other things to serve that calling. And in my experience, when you do that, it's like Marcia Sinikar. She wrote a book called Do What You Love, The Money Will Follow. And you know that book?
No, I don't, but I like the
title.
And it's a very specific book about following your passion. And it's also a practical book, because chapter 13 says, don't quit your day job. Uh-huh. That, you know, if the universe is providing some way to support you financially right now, that's part of the process. So if you continue to keep your day job as you build whatever it is that you're calling and that you can move to. So she talks about how to do that transition process in a mindful, kind of responsible way. And, you know, I've really found my life is just a perfect example of I've always done what I loved. I've been in business schools, but I've been teaching spirituality.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it really is.
It seems like oil and water. You know, it's just, how does it mix, you know?
yeah, but you know, people are hungry for a purpose,
right,
and meaning,
right,
and calling, and something that's value-centered, and the students I met were always hungry to work for a corporation that honored them as a whole person.
Yeah, touch the humanity in people.
That's right.
Touch the humanity in people to see, see that we are one somewhere.
Right.
You know, and it's amazing. You know, just like you were saying, to go beyond that that status quo thing. You know, I was never able to stay in the status quo in my life growing up. I just couldn't.
Thank goodness. You know,
I always had to do something different, and. It alienated me from some people, but at the same time, I just found such good company at the other side, you know?
Yeah, that's what happened, because
right,
like attracts like.
Uh-huh. It's kind of like the Edgewater idea, you know?
Yeah.
And you've created...
Well, one of the reasons I wrote Edgewalkers was because people who are on the edge, you know, on the cutting edge, looking over the horizon, being visionary, and that's another one of the qualities... And they have visions. They're different, and they get information and take action in different ways. And it can feel very lonely. And I wanted people to know that it's a really valuable way to be in the world. We need to honor people who have visions, who are visionary, who are different. And we also need to be in community with one another to encourage.
Yeah, that's so important.
Yeah. So that we're not thinking we're the only crazy one, that we are part of something bigger that's unfolding and moving humanity forward.
And I think that's what I felt when I heard you speak and spoke with you after. So encouraged.
Yeah, it's critical. And the other thing that I think is important is to know that there are edgewalkers just about everywhere. We're not a majority of people in the war, in any particular group. I would say edgewalkers might be 5 or 10% of any average organization or group. And too many edgewalkers would be a little crazy, because everybody'd want to go change things, and you wouldn't have any stability. But it's such an important role, and we're not the only ones. So we do need to encourage each other.
Absolutely. It's
Go ahead. I was going to say two more of the qualities of an edgewalker are integrity, very, very high integrity, which also can alienate them from people, because a lot of people will, like, you know, do what everybody else is doing. You know, just turn your head and just ignore it. Just do what everybody else is doing.
Right.
But edgewalkers have a higher value system about doing what's right for the greatest good, and a real commitment to trying to make a positive difference in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so when things are illegal, unethical, fraudulent, edgewalkers really, they get their courage up and they do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
So that integrity can alienate them from people who are taking advantage of the system. And they're very clear about their values and really work hard. No one's perfect, but they work hard to live in alignment with those values. And then the last quality is playfulness, and then this all comes from interviews that I did with fascinating, very inspiring CEOs and leaders in different institutions. And I found so many of them really playful, which was quite a surprise to me. And yet, when you think of the spiritual leaders, for instance, the spiritual leaders that you're attracted to, or even political leaders or church leaders, the ones who draw us in have a sense of humor, lightness, a playfulness, a creativity about them.
Right.
And, you know, so I started doing some research on the role of playfulness in intelligence, and found out that your whole brain lights up, right side, left side, everything lights up when you move into a playful or humorous kind of way of being.
I wonder if that's why companies like Google and some of the other companies are putting like the ping pong tables and the, you know, the rock climbing walls and the, you know, the game room so that their employees can take breaks and you know, have a little bit of fun.
Makes sense.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, they really understand the role of playfulness in creativity. And, you know, and there's a lot of research now, too, that, I mean, just even physically, if you sit at your desk for more than 20 minutes, your brain starts to shut down. And
right.
if you get up and just kind of wiggle around a little bit or do a little dance or go outside and get a breath of fresh air, it wakes up your brain more. But if you go and play ping pong or play electric guitar or climb a wall, then it's like even more powerful what it does to your ability to be creative and innovative and to break through kinds of things.
We got to hold that thought. We got to hold that thought because we got to go into a couple of promos here. So we'll be back in about 5 minutes. Can you hold on?
Yes.
Beautiful, beautiful. Okay. Here we go. See you in a little bit.